Welcome back to The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. Well, as we were just talking about, sex is biological, maleness and femaleness. They live in our DNA. Gender, on the other hand, how we think about being masculine or feminine, that's more complicated, full of perceptions and assessments of ourselves and other people. Well, our next guest believes that the same standard is applied to race in America. Sure, biology makes us look black or white, but teachers, our friends, potential employers make a lot of judgments based on how we act. And we, for a lot of reasons, and race is just one of these, but a big one, act differently in a lot of different situations around different people. Devin Carbato is co-author of Acting White, Rethinking Race in Post-Racial America, and professor at UCLA Law School, and he says that blacks in America are constantly performing at work, on the street, with friends, and that for blacks in America, a lot of life can be an act.
The basic idea is that when we think about race, we tend to think that people are judged simply based on how they look, that is, their phenotype. And one of the arguments that we make in this book is that there are lots of racially associated ways of being, how people speak, their accent, their dress, their demeanor, that shapes their vulnerability to discrimination as well, and that we should have in mind when we think about race and racial discrimination. And in some ways, this particular dynamic is more easy for us to understand in the context of gender. So we get, for example, that a woman's vulnerability to discrimination turns not just on the fact that she's a woman, but on whether she's perceived to be feminine or masculine. And we want to say that there's a similar dynamic at play with respect to race as well, that people are judged based on how they're perceived to act and not just based on how they're perceived to look.
Okay, so we all calibrate ourselves. I act differently at work among my colleagues and senators than I do at home or out having a beer with my friends. We all do that. So how is it different, in your view, for African Americans and the way they have to calibrate their behavior? You call it working identity. What does that mean for black folks? Because we all do it.
That's exactly right. I think everyone engages in some kind of impression management, shaping the way others think about us. The difference for African Americans and people who have what you might call outsider identities, that is, their identities is marginalized in some significant way, is that there are stereotypes that shape how we think about them. So if you're entering a workplace in which the assumption is that you're not going to fit in, that you're going to play the race card, that you're going to be the angry black guy, that you're not smart, that you're not intelligent, that you're not going to be loyal, that puts pressures on you to work your identity to signal that all those things that you think apply to me, in fact, don't. So it's the existence of negative stereotypes about race that creates an incentive for you to work your identity to demonstrate that all the negative things that you think apply to African Americans don't apply to me.
Now, of course, there's a difficult dichotomy here because it's then sort of telling any black person, I suppose, who doesn't act black enough, whatever that means, is automatically trying to act white. That's putting people in a tough spot.
It is putting people in a tough spot. And one of the things that we try to say in the book is that there's no real way, clearly, to act white or act black. But it is the case that we continue to perceive people as acting out their racial identities. And again, it raises questions about authenticity. Are you really black if you're perceived to act white? And Obama has clearly had to struggle with this particular dynamic. I don't know if you recall, but in the context of his presidential run, he would say explicitly, people are judging me based on whether or not I'm being perceived as white or not black enough or acting
and
white.
And let me stop you right there, because Barack Obama is the poster example for managing a race identity, the first black president, of course, but we all know he's biracial, white mother, black father, and it's well documented the way the president, even when he's giving speeches on race, speaks to this issue, acts to this issue. Let's listen to something, and it sounds a little trite to bring up Saturday Night Live in this context, but this is a skit that you bring up in your book that sort of speaks directly to the dilemma of President Obama of how black he is. Listen.
Barack, at this point in time, you're right about here, above Will Smith, but just below Bill Clinton. But this could change as the American people get to know you better. For example, you were raised by a single mother and your grandparents.
Moving up.
In Hawaii. moving down.
Okay, now that's just a little skit from Saturday Night Live. But for you in the book, it points up something very important, that the balance that Barack Obama, the first black president, has to manage, being too black, being too white, not enough of either. What does that skit sort of mean to the thesis of the book here?
I think the skit is a very smart one. We can all quarrel with whether the factors reflected in the skit actually move people up and down the scale of blackness in the way that the skit suggests. But what's important for our purposes is that it suggests that Obama's vulnerability as a black president doesn't just turn on the fact that he is black. Everyone understands that, or biracial for that matter. It turns on how black he is perceived to be. And I think the fact that we were willing to talk about that with respect to his presidential run suggests that we should be talking about it more broadly.
And you describe some of the active, purposeful management that Barack Obama, the politician, does to manage this part of his political life. The fact that he is black of skin, but doesn't want to be too black because it will turn off white voters. It strikes me, isn't this what every politician does? Maybe not with race. I think of his predecessor, George W. Bush. He wasn't just a conservative, was he? He was a compassionate conservative in the first campaign. Yes, I'm conservative, but I have compassion. I'm a Christian. It's a soft edge. Every politician, it seems to me, manages the expectation of their label and puts it in a middle ground that's palatable to the largest cross-section of people possible. Why is it different with Obama?
I think that's an excellent point and one well taken. And indeed, one of the early lines in the book is that everyone works identity all the time. So we certainly don't want to make the point that there's something that is singular about the dynamic that we're discussing with respect to race. We simply want to say that this generalizable phenomenon that we're all familiar with has racial dimensions. And if we take that point seriously, it means that we should rethink the way we typically understand racial discrimination in the workplace. It means that we should rethink the way we think about civil rights, racial profiling, affirmative action. All these racial issues that are hot button issues for us don't seem to take this particular dimension of race into mind.
Well, we touched on Saturday Night Live. Let's touch on Shakespeare, too. All the world's a stage, he said.
Indeed.
We are merely players. We all do it. We all act at work with our friends, at play, on the weekends. Different characters we play in our lives. But this book by Devin Carbato, co-author of Acting White, Rethinking Race in Post-Racial America, will make you think a little bit differently, I think, about the way some of us are forced to act or feel we must act to get by in modern America. Devin Carbato, thank you so much.
Well, Joel, thank you very much.